Monday morning you showed the fight. Good morning, NFL fans. Welcome to the Super Bowl edition of Football Nation's Monday Morning Huddle. I'm your host, Dave Holcomb. We have a great show for you today to cap off the 2013-2014 NFL season. We're going to recap Super Bowl 48, which was not much of a contest. The Seattle Seahawks defeating the Denver Broncos 43-8. Complete domination the entire time. It was actually the fastest for any team to score in the Super Bowl. The Seahawks scored on defense on the second play. And to dissect the game with us, we bring on guest star, Football Nation senior writer, Tom Pollan. Tom, thanks for coming on the show today.
Oh, thanks for having me, Dave. I always enjoy doing this.
So, a little bit of a lopsided game there. Not quite the same kind of game that we recapped last year.
Different game. I tell you, last year started out looking like it was going to be a blowout.
Yeah.
But boy, this year it never got over. I think we're never able to get back into the game. So.
Right. And I think a lot of people were kind of waiting, you know, even when it was 22-0, even 29-0. It was like, come on, Denver's going to do something here. In the last couple of years, we've seen games be completely different with the first half comparing it to the second half, and that just never happened. Seattle all the way dominating this one.
Well, I think it could have, except for the way Seattle opened up the second half. Kind of took the wind out of everybody's sails almost before the half even got started.
True, true. And before we came on the air, you were telling me the beginning of the first half, kind of the same thing. The game didn't even start, and Seattle is on the board with 2 points.
It's funny how it works out, because you're right, they didn't start either half, and they started both halves terribly. Plays went against them, and it seemed to set the tone for the half for them. Even on the kickoff, when Trenton Holiday took that kickoff out of the end zone, I was surprised. He should have taken a knee.
Mm-hmm.
He was way too deep in the end zone. Seattle's coverage was just swarmed him, stopped him, I think, at the 15-yard line, and then, yeah, their first play, Peyton Manning did everything that Peyton Manning usually does.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to step back here, I'm back in the shotgun, okay, I'm going to move up, I'm going to call out coverages, and the minute he started walking forward, his center snapped the ball. So I don't know what happened there, what kind of miscommunication they had. Because normally Peyton Manning and his offensive line are never so far off the same page as they were today.
Yeah, it seemed like maybe there was some nerves out of the center, Manny Ramirez, who hiked the ball. I don't think Peyton Manning did anything wrong on that play. There's a lot of things you can blame for him during the Super Bowl, his performance, but that particular play, like you said, he did everything that he normally does. The only thing that I could maybe comment and kind of jokingly comment about it, maybe it's karma, but the Broncos are in shotgun on every single play. That would not happen if you were under center every once in a while.
Well, that's true. And you're right. I mean, is it necessary? I guess that's just maybe the neck injury is what causes Manning to feel he has to be in shotgun every play, or maybe he feels like to see the defenses better, he can call out the defenses better. But you're right, I don't think it hurts him to be in under center. He never is under center anymore.
No, never. And I mean never. It's like 98% of the time, maybe more than that, he is in shotgun.
Yeah, and you know, I know he does this thing back there. He gets everybody ready, then he starts walking back and forth and calling out coverages. And one thing I found interesting is Fox had the field mic turned way down.
Hmm. Yeah,
I did not hear Manning calling out, making his calls.
I did not hear one Omaha during the Super Bowl.
No, because they didn't have the field mic'd up.
Hmm.
So I made a comment on it on Twitter because it suddenly struck me that we couldn't hear. Normally, you can hear everything Peyton Manning is doing on the field.
Right.
And the TV network makes sure you can hear everything Peyton Manning's doing on the field.
Yeah.
Was not the case this time.
Well, whether his center also couldn't hear him or not, the Seahawks were up 2-0 early, got the ball back, went down the field, had to settle for a field goal, were up 5-0, got another defensive stop, more traditional 3-and-out, got the ball back, were driving down, we're now approaching the end of the first quarter, and a part of me was feeling, you know, the Seahawks got to take care of their opportunities here, Tom. They got to get the ball in the end zone. Again, they settled for 3, we're only up 8-0. But at the end of the day, I think Seattle had them right where they wanted them, where they had a lead early and the defense was able to tee off.
Yeah, it's amazing. With an 8-0 lead, they were still able to tee off. The defense does not take long to you know, let the dogs out and get everybody, you know, firing out its quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like from that point on, and you know, being up 8-0, even though Seattle had scored 3 times, it was still, with the 2-point conversion, still a 1-score game.
Right, exactly, yeah.
It's not like Denver was out of this thing if they could have gotten their heads together.
Right.
Or, you know, something settled down. It seemed like Manning was, I don't know, he's playing like a flustered quarterback. He was the quarterback playing like he had never been there before.
Well, perhaps he was feeling some extra pressure trying to get another win, or all that legacy talk all season long, or all week long. And, but I would credit the Seahawks defense with this. Most of the credit has to go to Seattle. They were just tremendous on defense.
Oh yeah, they covered everything Manning wanted to do. They were there. Manning couldn't run screen plays. Moreno had a couple of good runs early, but they really didn't stick with that too long. They really didn't give themselves a chance to get the run game going.
Right. Well, they really didn't have a chance to get it going because very shortly after making the second field goal, 3 minutes into the second quarter, so 18 minutes into the game, Marshawn Lynch scores a 1-yard touchdown, and it's 15-0. So at that point on, really, it was pass, pass, pass for Denver.
Yeah, and I know you're facing a dominant defense, and there's no denying the defense. Everybody's been watching Seattle, watching the NFC all year, knew what Seattle's going to come out and do, and there's no denying that they're tough to beat on that, but it's still, even down 15-0, it's tough to abandon your running game when you're still only 2 scores down and you're in the second quarter.
Yeah. Well, you need to have a balanced offense. No matter how potent you are, you have to have some kind of balance to win.
Yeah. Especially considering that Manning was off anyway. Looked like he was the first-time quarterback here.
Right, right. And as we're quickly going down here, as we analyze into the second quarter, the Denver finally got something going there in the middle of the second quarter, right before halftime. It looked like they were driving down, maybe get a score to cut the lead in half, or at least get a field goal, make it 15-3 before halftime. But the complete opposite happened. They're getting pressure on Manning. His pass goes straight up into the air, and then linebacker Malcolm Smith picks him off and goes 69 yards for the interception touchdown return.
Yeah, and that's the first play that really started breaking this thing open. That's when things really started falling apart for Denver, because now you're almost driving down. You have at least a field goal. You're in that range. And it turned around on them like 15 seconds, and it was a completely different game. But, you know, one of the things about that interception, it wasn't, you know, it was kind of like a wounded duck that Manning passed.
Right, yeah.
But Noshan Moreno was the intended receiver, did nothing to go back for that ball, and did nothing to try and knock it away.
Yeah.
So I put that interception as much on Moreno as Manning. Okay, yeah, it was a terrible throw, but Moreno was just standing still waiting for it, and that's how it ended up getting picked up. You know, Noshan Moreno didn't come back for anything.
Moreno had a bad game. I don't know how else to put it. 5 carries, 17 yards, 3 catches for 20 yards. Longest run of the day was 9 yards. It's just, and like you said, not hustling on certain plays. He was somebody that had to have a good game. I know, you know, everybody was focusing on Peyton Manning and his legacy and all that stuff. And I expected Manning to have a better game than he did, but if the Broncos were going to end up winning, because Seattle had such a strong defense, they were going to have to win it with at least some kind of running game. And that didn't exist.
No, it didn't exist. And after that, there was not much, you know, the Broncos could do about it. They were at a point where, okay, now we are down. They weren't able to come away with points again right with a minute left to go in the half when they had driven down to the Seattle 19.
Right. They went for it on fourth down on that play.
Yeah, they did. Right.
Yeah.
And it was a short pass. He Manning kind of short armed it.
It skipped into his receiver.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He had
still
he had a lot of pressure in his face on that play.
Yeah. Still, but, I think you expect Manning to deliver a better pass.
Yeah. Terrible pass, and you knew at that time he had 2 excellent scoring chances. You're down 15-0. You had 2 excellent scoring chances, and not only do you come away with nothing, you came away giving up a touchdown. I think I heard somewhere on the broadcast they were talking about Denver had run 20 straight offensive plays at that point.
Right. Yeah. They did say that.
Yeah, and it was Seattle that scored the touchdown.
Right, because before those 20 plays, the time of possession, which you can debate whether or not that's even an important stat, but the time of possession was well in favor of the Seahawks, but after the 20 straight offensive plays, it was pretty balanced at halftime.
Yeah, exactly. And they did make that point coming out of the half that the time of possession had evened up. And all I was thinking was, well, yeah, but you haven't scored on any of it yet.
Right. Yeah. And meanwhile, at the beginning of the game, we're criticizing Seattle for settling for field goals while Denver not getting on the board at all and actually coughing up points.
Right. So, you know, you've seen it all year. It's really shouldn't have been a surprise that you have, you know, if you don't take the points, it's been coming back to bite teams all year.
Mm-hmm.
Not settling for the field goal. I'm all for trying to be aggressive, but you get the chance to take points. You got to take those points.
And at that point, you're down 22-0. You need some kind of positive thing. You take the 3 points.
Right. You've got to have something you can go into the locker room with.
Right. Yeah.
Because right then, they had nothing. They were getting beaten up, out-physical. Outplayed, you know, and they were doing a good job of keeping Marshawn Lynch under control on offense.
Yeah.
But they couldn't stop Seattle's passing game.
Well, we're going to take a quick break here. We're going to come back with so much more with recapping the Super Bowl. We'll get into the second half. We have Marshawn Lynch's stats as well. So stick with us here. Tom Pollan is on the show here as a guest star. He is FN senior writer. We'll be right back. So you're scared and you're thinking that maybe we ain't that young anymore. Show a little faith, there's magic in the night. You ain't a beauty, but hey, you're all right. Oh, and that's all right. Welcome back to Football Nation's Monday Morning Huddle. I'm your host, Dave Holcomb. We're recapping Super Bowl 48, Seattle Seahawks winning their first ever Super Bowl title. FN senior writer Tom Pollan is here with us. We're getting into the second half, and just like the first half started, Seahawks scored some points very early in the half.
Yeah, well, it was a terrible kickoff to start with.
Right.
And so Matt Prater had the leg to get that ball into the end zone. I don't know why they were trying to kick short and kick away from Harmon.
Well, that was the ironic thing. They were trying to not let that happen. They were trying to kick away from him, and by skipping it in and him taking it on a hop, I don't know if that screwed up the coverage team or if it was just poor coverage, but either way, I mean, Harvin, fantastic return, poor coverage.
Well, it was poor coverage, but part of the problem was Prater, the way he kicked it short, bounced up high, got into Harmon's hands. I think they wanted it to get into one of the upback's hands, but you gave Harmon time to see the field. And that's dangerous. You can't give him time to read the blocks, read where you're coming from. They didn't hold their lanes. He had time to get ahead of steam up before he even met the first wave of Bronco coverage.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets full steam going under him. He has a burst right now that's, you know, he's going to be impossible to stop.
Well, right before we went to break, we mentioned Marshawn Lynch, and we didn't say his stat line. He had 15 carries, 39 yards, and his longest run of the day was 18 yards. So you take that out, and he had 14 carries for 20 yards, an average overall of 2.6. I mean, Denver knew that they had to stop him to win this game, and they did stop him, but other people like Percy Harvin, who hasn't played all season long, stepped up and had huge plays.
Well, that's a funny thing because, well, on our last I-80 Sports Talk
broadcast, on MTR Media.
Yeah, you mentioned that you thought Percy Harvin was one of the players to watch. And nailed it. Because,
oh, you're giving me credit.
What?
You're giving me credit.
Yes, I'm giving you credit. That's right. You nailed it.
Well, I didn't think he would make a special teams play. I was talking about on offense, like what he did in the first half. He had some good big plays, but tremendous kickoff return.
Yeah, but even then, on offense, the first quarter, that end around had even had the cameraman fooled.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, that's he's just incredible. Once he gets going, you give him any kind of room, and he's just, impossible to catch.
Mm-hmm.
How do you stop him when he starts running? You can't catch up with him.
I think Russell Wilson's quote was, "How can you be any faster than Percy Harvin?"
Well, that's one way of looking at it, because he proved it today.
Well, by the way, Harvin, who signed a contract with the Seahawks this season, he was with the Minnesota Vikings. I think a lot of fans out there, I was watching the game with some pretty big football fans, and they didn't really know his past because he had been on the Vikings, and then he was hurt all this year, so people probably don't know he is in the middle of a six-year, not in the middle, in his first year of a six-year contract, $67 million. And although the Seahawks didn't get much out of him in his first year, I think he was worth every penny helping them get this win.
Well, yeah. He played a big part in the Super Bowl win. So, yeah, everything you paid him this season has paid off. Yeah, you're right. He's worth every penny. Now, see, being a fan of the NFC North, being a fan of the Bears, I know exactly what Percy Harvin is capable of doing.
Probably a little too well.
Percy Harvin quite a bit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, if he's healthy, yeah, he can be a difference maker. He is a difference maker.
Well, another difference maker for the Seahawks at wide receiver was Jermaine Kearse, and that guy is probably even, fewer people know him watching the game, and talking about his touchdown catch late in the third quarter, I mean, again, you can talk about it from a Bronco perspective, very poor tackling, but tremendous 23-yard touchdown catch by Kearse and running to finish the last 5-10 yards on that play.
Yeah, it was. It was an outstanding play. And you bring up a good point. And it seems strange because for as hard as the Seahawks defense was playing and tackling, it seemed quite the opposite on the Broncos side. It didn't seem like they were flowing to the ball.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of arm tackles.
Yeah.
Bad pursuit. So, you can see a difference between the two defenses.
To be honest, they looked like a defense that have been used to playing with a big lead all year and just keep the play in front of you. You don't have to make any big plays and cause turnovers and come back in games.
Yeah, that might be the case. That it's just not something they're used to, but boy, you know, at some point during the season, you're going to have to rely on your defense to make a play at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And they got nothing out of their defensive effort today.
Well, later on in the third quarter, the Broncos were able to finally score. Peyton Manning connects with Demaryius Thomas. A couple more stats here for you to reference here. Peyton Manning actually set a record for completions. He had to throw the ball 49 times, so he completed 34 of those for 280 yards. And the receiver he connected with for that touchdown, Demaryius Thomas, 13 catches, which is a Super Bowl record. But before we got onto the show, Tom, you mentioned 118 yards, which pops out at you and is great, but that only comes out to an average of less than 10 yards per catch.
Yes, exactly. And they needed Demaryius Thomas to be able to get downfield a lot better. That's more the kind of average you would look for out of Wes Welker, not Demaryius Thomas.
Which, actually, Welker had a higher average, not much, but he averaged 10.5 yards per catch, 8 receptions, 84 yards.
Yeah, exactly. And as I say, that's not... Demaryius Thomas, over the 2013 season, he averaged 15.5 yards per catch.
Wow.
So, that's holding him down really well. Even though he had 13 receptions, the Seattle defense did a good job of keeping him in front of them.
That's what Seattle does so well, and that's, I think, kind of what... Didn't realize it before the game necessarily, but while I was watching this game and Denver trying to run screens to Marino, and Thomas doesn't necessarily always streak down the field, but you throw him a little screen and then he burns you running after the catch, that doesn't work on the Seattle defense. They swarm to the quarterback, and then it looks like the running back is open for a screen, and then all of a sudden he picks up 3 yards and boom, he's down on the ground.
Why Demaryius Thomas was so far under his season average, they swarmed to the ball. You saw game tackling all day.
Right.
He had no chance to get yards after the catch the way Seattle was playing.
Right, yeah. Yeah, and that's, especially with, I'm sure many people want to argue this, but especially with Peyton Manning in his career, he doesn't throw the ball down the field that often anymore. And that's kind of their bread and butter all season long, those short screen passes and the receivers making plays, and it wasn't happening.
No, and it showed. They were playing right into Seattle's hands with that strategy. Seattle was ready for it. It didn't look like anything the Broncos did on offense surprised Seattle one bit.
No, that's a good point, too. which is I was going to say, which is surprising, because I felt like coming into the game, Seattle was the more predictable team. They want to come out, they want to run the ball, and they want to play defense. And they didn't change from that. They didn't have any trick plays or anything like that in this game.
No, but when Russell Wilson did pass the ball, he was very effective.
Oh, yeah.
He had a 123.1 passer rating, which is, you know, just incredible, especially for a Super Bowl.
Yeah, I got to imagine that's one of the better passer ratings in a Super Bowl.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to look it up, and I don't have a chance right now, but I think we could say definitely in the top five without even looking it up.
Well, I'm sure the passer ratings of the Steve Youngs and Joe Montanas who were throwing 5-6 touchdowns, I'm sure those guys have pretty high ratings, but Wilson, like you said, it's got to be up there.
Well, it's got to be up there. I think, 156 is the highest you can get.
Right, yeah.
Well, Wilson only threw the ball, you know, for 206 yards, but spread that out among 8 receivers. So right. He had 8 people catch the ball in his offense.
Completed 18 passes on his 25 attempts, like you said, 2 touchdowns.
Yeah. So he did everything he needed to do. He did everything that was required of him.
Flipping back to the Denver receivers, Thomas and Welker had good games statistically. If you don't look at those averages per catch, we talked about how the Seahawks took out Moreno. Well, they also took out Julius Thomas and Eric Decker. Thomas, 4 catches for 27 yards, and Decker, a single catch in this game.
Yeah, Decker was nowhere to be found, and apparently he had 5 targets, which I find hard to believe because I didn't see Manning looking for him as much. But the stats I see, they're crediting him for 5 targets, and he only caught one of them.
The stats I have also say 5 targets. I think it was in the 3rd or maybe even 4th quarter. I turned to someone who I was watching the game with, and I said, "Does Decker have a catch yet?" And I guess he had one. It was a very unmemorable one as well.
So, you know, this four receiver set, these 4 weapons that Manning has been counting on all year. As I say, we were talking about it Friday on I-80 Sports Talk that
right.
With the way Seattle played this physical defense, that it was a possibility they could take Denver's receivers out of their rhythm, kind of out of their game, and it looks like they did. Because Manning was having the trouble getting to them to begin with, and they weren't making any catches when he did get them the ball.
Right, and I think we've kind of said it already, but just to reiterate, Manning was off in this game. Even when they were open on those few occasions that Thomas or either Thomas or Welker down the field open, Manning missed them.
Yeah, he looked more like the rookie quarterback than Russell Wilson did. Or not necessarily rookie quarterback, but right. Young quarterback,
yeah.
Experienced quarterback.
Yeah.
Non-Super Bowl quarterback.
Right.
You know, Manning's been to this thing a couple of times, so it's surprising to see him missing the way he did, considering how accurate and how on target he's been all season.
We're wrapping up the Super Bowl here with FN senior writer Tom Pollen. Tom, before we get to our 4th and long segment in the next part after our break, I just want to ask you, what are your takeaways from this game? What are you going to remember when you think back to this Super Bowl played in New York? Is it the fact that it was played in cold weather or supposedly a cold weather type place, even though we didn't actually get that much cold on Sunday night? Or is it the Seattle domination or something with Peyton Manning and his legacy?
Well, one thing it'll be the Seattle domination, definitely. I think the NFL got lucky. And I think everybody in the NFL offices know they got lucky with the game conditions and the field in as good a shape as it was.
Yeah.
Because I don't think you can say under any circumstances that the weather affected the game.
No, I don't think it did at all.
And considering the winter we've had, I know that's been a worry for over a month now.
Right.
But, so it was an ideal condition as far as the way things were set up outside. But just the way Seattle swarmed to the ball, they never let anybody... They've never let anybody break free, even after a catch. You know, as far as Peyton Manning's legacy, he has a Super Bowl win. So he's not going to be thought of like, let's say, Jim Kelly or Dan Marino, quarterbacks who are great but have no Super Bowl.
Right.
They have no Lombardi Trophy. You know, Manning does have one. And his legacy is secure. I don't think he needs to worry about that. Yeah, people are going to look at his playoff record, and that's going to kind of set him apart from, you know, quarterbacks like Montana or, you know, who've won 4 or 5. But, you know, you just got to give props to Seattle because they came out and did everything they expected to do. They had a great plan on offense. And, you know, being from Chicago, being a Bears fan, it was kind of fun watching that defense form in towards the ball. So, you know, we can appreciate defense here in Chicago.
Well, to add to your point, I agree. Especially the last thing you said, being from Pittsburgh, I appreciated it as well. Which, by the way, sidetrack here. Did Joe Buck really need to bring up that in that Super Bowl 40, the only other time the Seahawks have been to the Super Bowl, he had to make a point, oh, there were some calls that didn't go Seahawks' way?
You know, I watched that game. Seattle was not going to win that game anyway. That was Pittsburgh's game from the start. And no, he did not need to reference that.
I understand that, you know, up till this point, Seahawks haven't had much success in their team's history. And when you go one time, and there were certainly questionable calls in the game, but there were questionable calls on both sides. And when you're an athlete, you try and overcome any adversity that hits you, whether it's weather, whether it's an injury or a referee's bad call. And quite simply, to sum it up, because I don't want to get into it too much here, Pittsburgh was able to overcome it in that game, and Seattle was not.
Yeah.
So.
As I say, Seattle was not going to win that game. Pittsburgh was the better team that day.
So, again, congratulations to the Seahawks. Maybe once and for all we can put to bed Super Bowl 40, that Pittsburgh was better on that day, but Seattle, you got your Super Bowl trophy first time in your franchise history. My takeaway from it, the championship, how dominating they did it. And my last takeaway, kind of looking at it as a whole in the NFL, you had the number one offense, you had the number one defense. So many of the rules today favor the offense. The commissioner's office, the NFL, fantasy sports fans want to see offense scoring. And I think the Seahawks proved in this Super Bowl that defense still wins championships. I know it's a cliche, and I know you don't need just defense. You need a quarterback. You need playmakers on offense. But if you have a stout defense, they can shut down any offense. Best offense arguably ever was Denver this season, and Seattle, no contest to this Seattle defense. It's got to go down as one of the best defenses since 2000, which they were on my list if you saw that slideshow. So that's my takeaway, that if you have a quarterback like Russell Wilson, a great running back, playmaker like Percy Harvin, and your great defense, you can win in the National Football League like it has been forever.
Absolutely.
So we're going to take a break here, but Tom is staying with us, and he'll be back for the Fourth and Long segment.
Well, everybody better move over, that's all. 'Cause I'm running on the
back here on Football Nation's Monday Morning Huddle. I'm your host, Dave Holcomb. We have FN senior writer here, Tom Pollen, for our Fourth and Long segment. Tom, I think you're our first ever guest for the Fourth and Long segment.
You know, I think I am. I don't remember you ever keeping a guest room for this.
Yeah, so you should feel extra special.
I do. Absolutely.
So we got three statements for you. If this is the first time you're listening to the show, I'm going to say a statement. Tom and I are either going to punt it away, that means we disagree, or grunt, we're going for it on fourth down. We have really blanket statements here, real to the point. First one, Seattle Seahawks will repeat as Super Bowl champions in Super Bowl 49. It's not too early for next year's Super Bowl predictions, right?
Oh, it's never too early for next year's Super Bowl. Tell you the truth, it's a tough one because it's very hard to repeat, but I'm going to grunt on that one because I think they're set up very well to compete and maybe repeat as champions next year.
They put up the stat during the game that they are the, I think it was second youngest team to ever win the Super Bowl. And they,
okay.
They put up the three youngest prior to Sunday with the Seahawks win, and it was the 71 Dolphins the youngest, and the other two were the 81 49ers and the 74 Steelers. And I think casual fans or not real strong NFL fans probably don't realize this, but what that stat was saying is those young teams that won Super Bowls early went on to win again. And that's the point that they were making, that the Seahawks have a great chance of repeating if they can keep most of this roster together. And I'm going to agree with you. I'm going to grunt very early. We don't know where free agents are going to go. We have the draft still. And the biggest thing, I think, for the Seahawks to overcome is right in their division, the 49ers.
Yeah, I agree. That's going to be, you know, it's going to be a continuation of what's turned into a great rivalry next season. And, you know, Harbaugh's not going to take anything lightly. He'll be going after him. But, you know, I love how this team plays. And you mentioned it, they're young. And I think they're set up perfectly. All their key players, I think, are pretty well locked up.
Right.
So it's just a matter of seeing what they can do in the draft, seeing what they can do in free agency. I don't see them taking any step back next season.
I don't either. And you know what? Even though it's very difficult to repeat in today's NFL, I think it's about time we see somebody repeat. Hasn't happened since the 2004 Patriots.
Yes. Yeah. So I think they're set up perfectly for it. So we'll see.
Our second statement, going to the Broncos side, again, very to-the-point blanket statements. Peyton Manning, at some point this offseason, will retire.
And this one, I think I'm going to punt it away.
Okay.
Because he sounded, for all intents and purposes, he sounded like he was, even if he won, he was making noises like he was ready to come back next year.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a pretty sour way for him to go out.
Yeah, very sour way.
Yeah, I think he's going to try and come back.
I agree. I think he's going to come back. Maybe a better statement would have been, can he get back to the Super Bowl? Do you think with the Broncos and his receivers, if they can pick up a couple of defensive players, can they get back to the big game?
Yes, I think they can. I think with his receivers, and I don't think any of his receivers are free agents. I think he's got them locked in for next season.
I think Sean Moreno might be a free agent.
All right, and tell you the truth, I'm not going to worry about that as much. I think they like Bell, too, or Ball.
Right, yeah, Ball.
To take over for Sean Moreno.
That's a good point. They have Ball, who's a rookie, play pretty well if he gets better in pass blocking on third downs. So he can play a lot more. And you know, Ronnie Hillman didn't play all that much, and he's supposed to be a pretty decent back as well. So maybe he comes into his own if Moreno's not there.
Yeah, tell you the truth, I don't think Moreno is the one who'll be back next season.
Okay. You're saying Moreno, you think, is definitely out?
Yeah, I think Moreno's definitely out.
Okay. Okay.
Wouldn't that surprise me a bit?
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me either. For our last statement here in the fourth and long segment, we're going to get away from the Super Bowl game and go into what transpired on Saturday night with the award ceremony. You had the announcements of the MVP, which again was won by Peyton Manning, the fifth time in his career. You had Coach of the Year, Ron Rivera, a lot of other awards, which are actually listed in the podcast article page if you're listening to it on Football Nation. But we're going to talk about the Hall of Fame class, which was announced, and the statement, Marvin Harrison, not part of the 2014 Hall of Fame class. Harrison was a snub.
Oh, grunting on that one, definitely.
I agree. Well, what's your reasoning?
His stats, the way he finished his career, he's one of the... He had the most receptions and was very high in yards. I think he led in touchdowns. I did an article about ranking the Hall of Fame finalists, and I don't remember his stats completely off the top of my head, but I felt he was the most qualified wide receiver out of the three going in.
Yeah, that was going to be my main point, that you had three wide receivers in the finalists, Andre Reed being the one that got in. You also had Tim Brown and Harrison, and quite frankly, Harrison was clearly the better of the three. And if you're only going to let in one, why wouldn't it be him? I've heard reasonings that he played with Manning his whole career, Peyton Manning, and his stats are inflated. That's a bunch of bogus.
I made that mention in my article. You know, that argument is dead on arrival. Because you can also say the same thing. Manning had Marvin Harrison to throw the ball to.
Right, yeah, it works both ways.
Exactly. And there are plenty of, a lot of wide receivers in the Hall of Fame who had exceptional quarterbacks throwing to them.
Yeah.
You know, it worked, and you're right, it works both ways. You know, that is a terrible argument. I mean, I can't believe anybody who knows anything about football actually made it.
I'm glad we're getting your route up, Tom. And the other argument I heard for him, which I think is bogus as well, his involvement with the 2008 shooting, which neither one of us are really up on all of the details, but apparently he was involved with some kind of shooting back in 2008, a year after he retired or around his retirement, and the Hall of Fame voters taking on, you know, this sense of morality that, oh, I can't vote for Harrison in his first season. I'll vote for him in his second year, but I'm going to punish him because of this little black mark that's on his life and not give him the Hall of Fame in his first year. That is a bunch of bogus as well.
Yes, it is. It's ridiculous. Nothing was ever actually proved about any of that. And yes, it happened at his club, but that has nothing to do with what he did on the football field.
Exactly. You vote for players based on what they do on the field. You have to take out anything they do off the field. It's two very different things, and the Hall of Fame voters have to do that. It's not the Hall of Fame or morality. It's the best players.
Yes. Yeah, do you think they're going to keep Ray Lewis out of the Hall of Fame when it's his time to come, you know, comes up to be voted in?
No, but would it surprise me if they don't vote for him in his first year? The way it's done? No.
I would be surprised.
You really?
I think he's getting in his first year. Yeah, because he spent the last 10 years of his career whitewashing his reputation.
Well, you know, maybe that'll work in his favor, because Harrison, his incident happened basically when he was done playing, and that's kind of the way he went out. He's not a public figure. He doesn't have Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. I read that today in an article. He doesn't have any of that, so that's kind of what he's remembered for, whereas Ray Lewis is on TV all the time, and that's that incident in Miami happened, what, 14 years ago? 15 years ago.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah, I think it's bogus. I think Marvin Harrison was definitely the best receiver. He was one of the best receivers of his day.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's one of the reasons, that's one of the arguments you make when you're figuring out whether someone is Hall of Fame worthy. Did he dominate his era?
Yeah.
There's no doubt that Marvin Harrison dominated his era.
Exactly. I was going to use the exact same phrase. He dominated his era.
And it surprised me that Reed got in ahead of Jim Brown, not just Marvin Harrison.
That surprised me as well. Now, I think we both are a little bit different stance on Reed. Now, I think everybody who got in this year is deserving. So it's hard for me to argue that guys like Harrison or Jerome Bettis were snubbed, because I think the guys that got in deserve it. But I think Harrison in particular deserved it more than Andre Reed, and even Tim Brown deserved it more than Andre Reed. But you, I don't think you even believe Reed is a Hall of Famer at all.
I thought he was borderline. One of the things I had against Andre Reed was he never led the league in any of major receiving categories during his career.
Hmm.
So in any season of his career, he never led the league in receptions, touchdowns, yardage, you know, not once.
Right.
And you can't necessarily hold that against him. He was never first-team All-Pro. You know, made plenty of Pro Bowls, but was never considered a first-team All-Pro in any season.
He was never the best receiver in the league.
No, no.
In any individual season.
Look at it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, yeah, he retired with some good numbers, and I thought he was borderline. I thought, you know, he might get in. I thought there was a good chance he would get in at some point. Yeah, no inkling that it would happen this season.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, regardless, I mean, we can argue it all night, all day, but Tom and I want to congratulate the guys that did get voted into the Hall of Fame. That is Derek Brooks, Michael Strahan, Walter Jones, Andre Reed, Anarius Williams, which I know you're happy about, Tom, and then the two senior guys, Ray Guy and Claude Humphrey.
You know, I was looking up Claude Humphrey's career for my article. I didn't realize he had as dominating a career as he did.
Hmm.
He got overlooked for playing on some very, very bad Atlanta Falcons teams.
Ah, okay.
So he's actually very deserving. I think he's more deserving this year than Ray Culp was last year.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, I like that they vote in the senior guys, some of the older players, and it gives us younger fans a chance to really learn who they were.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, that's fun for me. So
yeah, I'm very happy to see the guys who got in. As I say, you know, it's a long road to get there, and I think the Hall of Fame selection committee did a great job. And especially happy to see Aeneas Williams finally get his recognition that he's deserved for so long.
Well, that wraps up our fourth and long segment and our time here with Tom Pollen. Tom, do you have any projects in the making for Football Nation coming up this week or any time in the off season?
Well, I have plenty of projects coming up in the off season. I'm going to start rolling out some of my dropping back articles again, because I've kind of fell to the wayside because I've been fairly busy keeping up with some of the things that we've been doing during the season.
Yep, those articles are so good.
What?
Those articles were so good.
Well, I appreciate that. And I do have some of those planned. And we'll see what comes up. There's always news. There's always some interesting angles to take to write about. I don't have anything in the pipeline right now, but I will soon. It's I always want to keep my name out there and keep articles on the site.
Where can our listeners follow you on Twitter, Tom?
Oh, on Twitter, you can follow me at TJPOLLIN, and, you know, at sign, and, you know, give me a follow. I do interact a lot with people on my timeline, so So I'd love to have you.
Yeah, I can definitely give you credit for that you definitely interact with all kinds of people on Twitter. 3,000 followers for you, and I haven't dropped my Twitter yet in this show, so if you want to follow me, my handle is DMHOLCOMB. You can also email me, let me know what you think about the show, holcombmdavid@gmail.com. We're all hoping that, Tom, you can help us get over 725 clicks or views on this podcast. That'll set a new record for the show.
Will it?
Yeah, so
we're going to shoot for that then.
Yeah, I figured that would be a little fun goal for the two of us. I think the previous high is 727 last time I checked, so we got to beat that.
All right, we're going for it. We're going to make it. Push this thing over the top.
Yes, definitely push it over the top. I was gonna say, last but not least, if you just love Tom and I's interaction, you can listen to us every Wednesday and Friday.
Yes, you can.
So
funny how that works out, huh?
Yeah. Tom and I go over all sports, all four major sports in North America on MTR Radio Wednesday and Friday nights, 7 to 9 Eastern Time. That's mtrmedia.com. Tom, thanks so much for coming on the show. It's been fun.
Well, thanks for having me, Dave. Yeah, I've enjoyed it a lot.
Welcome back to Football Nation's Monday Morning Huddle. I'm your host, Dave Holcomb. Fitting, of course, that we had Bruce's music on the show today. The Super Bowl, of course, taking place in New Jersey. That was from his album Born to Run, a good one. Good oldie, which I had a hard time picking three songs from, because there's so many great hits on that album. Of course, Bruce has his newest album out, High Hopes. They had a little teaser during the Super Bowl, but I still have to check that out. So those three songs from Bruce, his album Born to Run. We are wrapping up this edition of Monday Morning Huddle, this season of Monday Morning Huddle. Hard to believe we've been on the airways now for 66 episodes, two full seasons of the NFL. I want to take this time right now at the end of this show, the end of this year, to thank everybody that came on the show. Cooper Allen, a great contributor on Football Nation. He was on the show last week to preview the Super Bowl. He produces great stuff on the site. I really encourage you to check him out. Again, Cooper, he became a regular guest on the show this season. Thanks for coming on. Guys like Alex Reamer, he was a podcaster on the site, but he's moved on to other websites in the Boston area to cover Boston sports. He's been a multiple-time guest. Chad Johnson, our expert from Ohio covering the Bengals, he's from casualheroes.com. He was on multiple times. Justin Henry, another great contributor to Football Nation and the sister site Cold Hard Football Facts. He was on multiple times. Great stuff from him. Kevin Napier, he's another guy from casualheroes.com. Michael Quinn, otherwise known as PJ, he is another great contributor from Football Nation. We also had, of course, Tom Pollan today. Tom and I have paired up, and we're on MTR Radio on Wednesdays and Fridays. And my buddy Sam Jones, who I think occasionally listens. He is the ex-semi-pro quarterback up in Vermont. Everybody, thanks for coming on the show. And I also want to take this time to thank Todd DeFries and especially Bill Enright. If it wasn't for them, all of us at Football Nation wouldn't have a place to share our work, to share our thoughts. and to have a voice. And those guys are two of the leaders at keeping and making Football Nation not only a dream but a reality every single day. And they do an excellent job of editing all of our stuff and making sure that we do have a voice and we can build an audience, which we have been able to do here on the show and here, all of us as writers here at Football Nation. And in particular, Bill, who encouraged me to start this podcast almost 2 years ago now. Thank you very much. Getting to the point of building an audience, I want to share now how successful this show has become. And I'm not doing it to rub it in people's faces, but really to just emphasize how much I appreciate the listenership that I've been able to build. And I want to thank you listeners for staying with me through the first year and through the second year and telling your friends, because obviously we are picking up listeners and followers as we go. I have the statistics from season one of Monday Morning Huddle, which are going to be inflated because they are based on the views that we had as of today. So it had season one had another year to accumulate more views, which it doesn't accumulate a ton of views, but an article view here and there, and before you know it, you've gained 100, 200, and then that really starts to add up. So I believe at this point last year, we had maybe just shy of 4,000 listens in season one. From what I remember, around there, maybe a little bit shy of 4,000. When I double-checked, as of February 3rd, season one had a combined 5,663 views in its 33 episodes. Seven times it went over 200, and the top listened podcast was at 370. Season two, which hasn't had the advantage of being in syndication yet, not even counting this episode, so we're counting 32 episodes, we have 10,041 listens. We've doubled what we had at the end of season one on this day last year. So my goal is to double it, even including the syndication. So we're going to need another 1,200 listens or so to double season one, because again, that's 5,600. We're at 10,000 in season two. So quite a ways to go. But again, I'm hoping Tom and I can make this the top listened article or listened podcast in the show's history, which would be over 7:30. I went back and double checked. It is 7:30 is the top listened episode, which was the second one this year. And last year, like I said, 370 was the top listened podcast. We beat that in the very first episode of season two that went over 400. In the first two episodes combined, we hit 1,000, which it took 10 episodes last year to hit 1,000. 28 of the 32 episodes so far, excuse me, 29 of the 32 episodes so far were over 200. That's four times as many from season one, 10 times we went over 300 listens, five times over 500, twice over 700. So I just want to thank everybody for listening, for tweeting, for following. It's just been tremendous. I have so much fun doing this show, and I really hope that we can continue to do it, that I can continue to do it on Football Nation. As of right now, my plan is to come back May 5th. That is the week of the NFL draft. So that's what I'm shooting for as this moment. A lot of things are up in the air. I'm a part-timer at the Star-Ledger covering high school sports. I do a lot of other things online to gain experience. Like I said, I have a radio show with Tom on another site. I do this. I do a couple other writing and podcasts for another site called pickandsplinters.com. So a lot of things are up in the air. I'm hoping to get hired full-time by somebody in the next calendar year. But I am really hoping that I make time to continue doing this show for a third year. That would be fantastic. So as of right now, mark your calendars down. I'm already counting down to the opening day in September, but even before that, NFL draft, which starts May 8th and then carries on into the weekend. So again, we will be back May 5th Then again on May 12th, hopefully we have a guest, somebody to help us out here, a draft expert, maybe even Todd DeFries. I know he is a big college fan and can help us out really with the NFL draft. Other than that, I encourage everybody to go back and check out the podcast that maybe you missed during the season. Go back and click on an episode if you want to hear it again. If you want a complete set of season 2 of Monday Morning Huddle, there will not be a DVD release. I'm sorry. I don't know why you'd want a DVD. You would just, it'd be a video of me doing it, doing the podcast, just speaking into the computer. So that wouldn't be much use. But if you do care to listen to past episodes from season 2 or season 1, you can check out my website. The link is in the article page where you're listening to, if you're listening on Football Nation. Or you can check out the link is my website, davidmholcomb.com, and just follow the tabs at the top to the Football Nation page. But in the meantime, until May, which it's going to be here sooner than you think, until then, I'm going to go try and find some peace in my mind.